The Warriors back at work at team headquarters on this Monday, preparing for Tuesday's Game 2 of the Western Conference semifinals against Portland after a victory in Game 1 on Sunday afternoon at Oracle Arena over the Trailblazers. I'm Lawrence Scott, and ahead, we will hear from Andrew Bogut and Coach Kerr, plus a Warriors sound one-on-one with assistant coach Ron Adams. It's a two-part interview taped today at team headquarters, part one in moments. But first, Andrew Bogut was asked about the custom of the fist bump just before the game begins, and that's today's tip-off.
I thought I noticed when you were playing against Dwight Howard and yesterday against Plumlee, at the tip, at the very beginning, you don't seem to acknowledge them or fist bump them or anything. And I wonder, is there a tactic, is there a strategy involved with that?
No, they don't acknowledge me or fist bump me.
I understand that.
Yeah.
Are you? If they did, you would acknowledge them?
Yeah, I mean, you got to ask them that question.
I'm asking you the question.
Would I?
Yeah.
Oh, if they put their fist out, I'll most likely.
But why don't you put yours out?
Because in Australia we shake hands, we don't fist bump.
Do you shake hands with them?
No, because they want a fist. So it's a bit confusing, you know, like it ends up being like this. So we can't, I can't really, you know, we shake hands like firmly. We don't do all the hang on and all that stuff. And then they want a fist. So you just end up just standing there like, which shake do we do? Do we hug? Do we, so I just let it go, you know, just play basketball. Does that answer your question?
I think you're having me on.
You think?
I do.
No, it's just confusing. You know, there's a lot of different handshakes.
Okay.
More from Bogut outside of the Lowell Cone Zone a bit later. But now to part one of our talk with Coach Adams. And in the preseason, we had a conversation right here on the podcast where he referred to the concept of coaching this team being in some ways correlative to gardening, growing the spirit of the team with the players individually and as a complete group for sustainable success. Now, we ask again about the state of this certainly bountiful garden here during the playoffs.
Well, we're a young team, and I still think we're... We have a lot of growth in us, not only in terms of probably playing with a little bit more detail to our game, but also we have a number of young players, and they grow every week, every month. So that, you know, that's just a natural kind of process. And I think we have we've shown good growth this year. I think in confidence, in probably internalizing the kinds of things that a tremendous amount of winning does for you individually as well as collectively. So I think the team has shown really good growth, and I think they've grown under adversity. You know, we've had some adversity this year. We've lost players. Right now we're operating without the best player in the world, and that makes a big difference. But anytime you're challenged in those kinds of adverse situations, adverse for sports, not for the world, you have to collectively pull together, and that's a form of growth and development.
What's the key to helping the young players stay mentally ready?
Well, I think Steve has a very good formula for that. He plays people. And he's not afraid to throw anyone on our roster into a game. He has confidence. For example, Anderson has not been playing a lot of minutes recently, and in the last two games has come in and played and done extremely well. So I think everyone on the team knows their number can be called at any time. I think that keeps people aware, alert. They know that when they play minutes, their minutes will be assessed, and if they're playing well, they have more chances. So I think that's one form of it. But I think if you're a good pro, you understand that you look at the playing field, we're on a team with a lot of talent, we're a pretty deep team. You know you have to keep the edge, and you know you have to do the things necessary for you to keep that edge. So I think that works towards keeping people alert, ready.
When you're in a playoff series like this, and it came very quickly, the opponent, and then there's going to be two games, and then pretty big gap between games. There'll be a game Tuesday at Oracle Arena, and then the next one will be Saturday in Portland. But when you're doing the day-to-day operations to prepare for an opponent in the playoffs. How have things changed in the approach? What differences might there be in the way the coaching staff works to get the players prepared during a playoff series as opposed to the regular season?
Well, the playoffs are completely different from the standpoint of focus. You have one team at a time. And so you have total focus on this team. Everything is done with in more depth. For example, the players are expected to thoroughly know their opponent tendencies. Very important in a playoff series. They also study a playbook and understand the other team's offense, what they're trying to do defensively also, their play calls. So there's more time involved, there's more focus involved, and the alert players, the players that are really involved in this, and I think we have, you know, practically an entire squad of that, really do their homework at a higher level. It's a little tricky from the coaching standpoint in terms of how much work you do. For example, we're going to have some days off. Those can be good practice days, so those can be very productive days. But you're doing a lot of pacing of your team. These games are not only physically demanding, but they're very emotionally and mentally. Maybe that's being redundant, but they're emotionally taxing. And the recovery time period is important, and everyone is different. We have players whose minutes we try to manage. So after a game, they're filling their bodies in perhaps a more adverse way than some of the younger guys on the team. So that has to be managed. You want to keep people sharp, but you don't want to wear people down because the games are wearing at this stage of the season. Plus, we played, We're approaching probably 100 games for the season, so counting exhibition.
When you think of what you saw that was an encouraging sign in Sunday's game one against Portland, what are some of the things you'd like to see built upon, and where are some aspects that can be improved, even though we saw an excellent team win?
Well, I thought we followed our game plan well, defensively and offensively. So that was a really important thing for us, and really a credit to our team. I thought they plugged in really well. And we have to, whether we tweak a game plan or not, we have to really be locked in as a team as to what we're trying to get done. And that takes some forethought going into it. When you're off the court, perhaps, but just, you know, kind of playing the game before it starts and understanding what's coming at us. The other thing that I think, I might be straying from your question, but the other thing that's important is that we continue to understand, I think we've grown up a lot in this regard from our team a year ago at this stage of the playoffs, but Portland is a really fine opponent. They don't beat themselves. They have some really, really talented players, headed up by those two guards. They're just terrific players. And when you let up or when you don't do things collectively to stop this group, they're right down your throats. And so just this, the awareness, the not backing off from the mission, so to speak, is extremely important, and then something that we try to stress, and certainly the players are preparing for.
Part two with Coach Adams, specifically on leadership within the team and what the Warriors look to for inspiration, coming up in just a bit. But now, the sound of practice, and first, Coach Kerr with the latest on this Monday before Tuesday's Game 2.
Steph able to get on the court at all today?
No. We actually did not hold a practice. We just had a film session, and now everybody's getting their own shots up, treatment, whatever. I'm sure Steph will be out here shooting before long. Probably after you guys leave, though.
So you think he'll shoot today?
Yeah, he'll definitely shoot today.
So Thursday's the next true scrimmage opportunity, correct?
Probably.
Well,
yeah.
Likely.
Yeah, we'll probably have Wednesday off. And then Thursday, we will definitely get up and down and hopefully he'll be able to take part, but we don't know yet.
In a perfect world, would you like him to get into a game that is not an elimination situation or a kind of a, I mean, it's the playoffs, they're all high stress, but just to try and get him some, getting the rust off?
Yeah, I mean, we had the same situation in Houston. You know, we wanted to get him back. We got 2 days of work in. You could see he was rusty, but he still makes an impact just being on the, out on the floor. So I don't know how it'll play out here. It's not like, you know, if we're 2-2 or something, we're not going to bring him back. You know, I mean, it's not, we can't let the series score determine whether we bring him back. It's really based on his health and his rhythm. And so we'll do our best to help him get that rhythm in practice and then try to put him in the best positions once he is back. To make an impact, maybe, you know, without having to be Superman, you know. We're not going to bring him back until he's ready to come back, so he's not going to re-injure himself. But at that point, it will have been, you know, best case scenario, 2 weeks after the knee, and really three if you count the ankle, almost three. So it's not ideal, but you know, we can definitely use him, and hopefully if things go well and we can continue to play well and advance, now we'll have more of a chance for him to build some momentum.
Steve, Draymond spoke about the theme in the last round being, you know, the ball movement and passing, and yesterday starting out with setting a defensive energy and an intensity. Were you pretty pleased with how they came out of the gates?
Yeah, our defense was good. I mean, Portland is one of the hardest teams in the league to guard. They are extremely well coached and disciplined. I mean, they had 9 turnovers last night. We had a couple points in the game where we're up 23-25. You can see their discipline, their execution, how well coached they are. So they're not going to be a team that's going to panic and all of a sudden goes from 25 to 35 and it's game over. They're the kind of team that, you know, they're going to stay with it. And they've got such great shot makers that they're always going to be on your tail. And so our defense has to be locked in for 48 minutes.
All right, now back to Andrew Bogut's time with the media. We heard a variety of topics following Bogut's excellent Game 1 Sunday, a double-double with 12 rebounds and 10 points, plus 3 blocked shots and a pair of steals. This was the talk on Monday.
I'd first like to know about those jump hooks. They look really good. I hadn't seen them a lot before. Do you do them left and right-handed?
Yeah, I get some tape from when I played in Milwaukee. I mean, you know, I don't shoot the ball as much here, but I guess I'm still capable of making some shots. Still working on it every day, so, you know, at one point in my career, that was kind of my go-to move was both my hooks. So I'm definitely not uncomfortable doing it.
Is there something about this matchup in particular where you felt you needed to be more aggressive offensively, or is that just the way the game
went? I don't think so. I mean, look, I fell into a lot of them, you know, and our offense is predicated on ball movement. We don't really ISO a lot of guys, so it's not like I was saying, hey, when Clay come off, you know, look for Bogues or whatever. Like, it just comes in the flow of play. So, you know, I had some open shots and I made them.
Andre said yesterday that he thought that you and Draymond have the best communication of any bigs. And is that something you pride yourself on?
Yeah, I mean.
And would you agree with that?
Yeah, I think to be, you know, in the league, like the all defensive teams and all that, they're also stat predicated. You know, there's a huge value that franchises know about guys that communicate, guys that are in the right spots. You know, you could block 4 shots a game, but you could also, you know, give up 4 offensive rebounds in a row a game because you're trying to block a shot. So it comes down to communication is a huge part of it. It's a thing that doesn't get credit statistics wise. Being in the right spot at the right time, and you know, I want to make sure guys like Steph and Clay aren't getting nailed by guys like Plumlee or Ed Davis. Because if I don't call a screen, you know, not only is Lillard going to come up wide open for a shot, I mean, a guy could get hurt. So me and Draymond do a good job of covering up for each other. We know we can overhelp in certain spots on the floor. It seems like every time I go to help, you know, Draymond's got my back and vice versa. And, you know, that's why we're, you know, a top 5, top 10 defensive team in this league.
It seems like you're really want to try and set a tone right from the opening tip? I mean, yourself. I mean,
yeah, especially mainly defensively. I mean, I think it's very important that we don't give up just layups early on in games. You know, if we give up layups to guys like Lillard and McCollum and they start feeling good about themselves, all of a sudden those threes are, you know, they open up the basket for guys like that, guys that are scorers. You see it with Clay and Steph all the time. You know, if they have a bad shooting night and they hit some free throws or get to the lane, all of a sudden it changes their fortune. So I'm trying to protect the paint and make sure they get nothing easy early, and then we'll live with the results.
Is it difficult to, if they're funneling stuff to the middle, is it more difficult against guys like that who are kind of creative and kind of shifty and can kind of get into your body a little bit?
Yeah, it is. But it takes a toll on them too. That their guys, both those guys, play 40 plus minutes. Their rotation's eight if nine at times. So we think over the course of a series, if they're coming in there and getting banged around, even if they are fouls, you know, we're happy to do that. The thing with Lillard and McCollum is it's dangerous. We don't want them getting walk up threes, and we don't want them getting easy layups. So everything in between that, we're kind of okay with at this point.
All right, we wrap things up with a bit more from Coach Adams, leadership and inspiration, the topics, and we start with the essence of leadership and how it is fostered throughout the roster.
I think at the base, it's having a coherent message, whether collectively to your team or certainly to an individual. And so that message for one person might be different from the message to the next person on your team. And having clarity in that, having it well thought out, understanding that this is challenging, and we will as humans make errors, and we will as humans have successes, and trying not to let the you know, a bad play or a bad few minutes on the part of a player or your team affect the you know, the long-range goal. Things happen in a game. Generally, you can always recover from them for the most part. But this kind of resiliency, I think, is part of leadership. And I think for Steve, he's a very encouraging person to the team. Having played the game, he recognizes the pitfalls and looking back at his own career in terms of whether playing a game or, you know, whatever it might be. But he is he's demanding, but he's also understanding about what happens in a game and how people can, let's say, be tricked or, you know, not perform at a certain level. And it's not the end of the world. It's just a matter of encouraging people, probably showing them pictures of what's going on, perhaps what they could do better, perhaps what they have been doing so well. Like, you know, that there's, it's a two-edged sword. So that is all part of leadership, but also part of leadership in a small group. We're not talking about a massive group of people like in a country, but is simply having people around you who have this mindset about being led, which is important. People, you know, you have to have a willingness to buy in and be led. And at the same time, I think what we do here, and we've done it well, but it's also because of the human being that we're dealing with on our team, you know, the kind of person we're dealing with. But we really encourage a lot of individual initiative, leadership, for lack of a better word. So we have a lot of people who lead in their own way, express themselves, and we're pretty much a collective in that regard. And I think I've always said that the secret to our team is that we are a composite of skills, people, whatever, but this composite really works. It fits together really well. And in that, within that composite, we have many good leaders. We have some who stick out. We have some who are more subtle. I would suggest to you and the fans that there's no team that doesn't have people at the end of their bench that are not leading in their own ways. It can be a young person, it could be an older person, it doesn't matter. but there are so many levels of leadership in a team, and this, you know, the people who don't play as many minutes perhaps as other people, their leadership, their encouragement to others, their buying into the process is a tremendous form of stability for a team.
Finally, when you think of how leaders inspire others in general, what inspires these players on this Warriors team?
Well, I think all of us like to think that we can speak to a group and inspire them. We like to think that our words have meaning. Our actions certainly have more meaning, I think. But if you're talking about motivation and you're talking about in a team setting, I would say most coaches over the course of time would tell you that their most highly motivated teams were those teams comprised of motivated people from the outset. That's who these people are. Now, on our team, there's probably different levels of motivation. But I would say to a person, we have a motivated squad on an individual basis. Can you foster this whole aspect of motivation as a leader? Yes, you do have play a part in that, but I would suggest to you, and that's been really the finding of so many coaches over the course of time, when they're honest with themselves, their most vibrant teams, the teams that appear to be the most motivated, are teams of motivated individuals. So the trick is to accumulate, or in college, to recruit the most motivated people as best you can determine that. It's not simple. And that leads to greatly motivated teams more than anything else. I personally think, for example, Steve is a good motivator in a low-key, clever, and very honest way. By clever, I mean simply... clever can be simply a realistic assessment of what's going on and what you have to do, you know, or smart. That's just a smart way of doing it. But I think Steve combines a lot of these characteristics of a good leader, but he's not a rah-rah guy. He never over-talks to the team. I think it's important because, again, we talked about it earlier, but this messaging thing is really important. But I think he does a masterful job of keeping it simple, saying the right things. And in the process, the things he is saying have motivational value to the team, but not in the sense that the average person would think of motivating a sports team with rah-rah or great stories or whatever. Yes, he can tell a good story from his past, and he has a great history to draw from in that regard, but I don't know if that makes sense to people, but you know, it's sometimes just putting an idea forward that lights a fire amongst motivated people and that fire will carry them.
All right, thanks for listening in. Extended Warrior Sound postgame coverage coming here after Game 2. I'm Lawrence Scott with this Warrior Sound coverage of the 2016 NBA playoffs.